This is James Moore, pastor of New Life Community Church in Kansas City, Missouri, praying this audio message will be a blessing to you. For more information or to donate, please visit newlifekc.com.
Well, hey, good morning. My name is Alex. I'm the associate pastor here at New Life Community Church, and I know something about the majority of you watching this. You also watch YouTube. Come on, don't deny it. You watch YouTube. I read recently that the majority of U.S. internet users, which is you, watch and visit YouTube regularly. Back in April, I don't know if you remember, we had those stay-at-home orders, and the Nielsen Corporation, which always is tracking how many people are watching different shows or different TV, they reported that YouTube streamed 32 billion minutes of YouTube in 1 week. Now, I know that church is supposed to be a safe place. And even church online should be a safe place. So I'd like to be vulnerable. I'd like to be transparent with you. I need to confess something to you. I watch YouTube almost every day. I do. And it's a little bit hard to say because I feel like right now some of you are actually judging me. Now, let me be honest. Most of the time, most of the videos I watch are about the Kansas City Chiefs. Come on, Super Bowl reigning champs. And I want to find out, like, what did people think about their last performance? What about the addition of Bell in the backfield? What's going to happen to Clyde? Is Patrick Mahomes still Patrick Mahomes? And then, like, what are the predictions for the upcoming week? So I watch a lot of YouTube videos about all the commentary surrounding the Chiefs. But if I'm fully transparent, I also like those compilation videos that they do of like America's Funniest Home Videos. Like it's like 30 or 40 minutes and I can't stop watching of like pets and people falling down and just, I don't know, I just find it to be a good time. And I guess I also watch the Family Feud reruns where it's Steve Harvey and people making dumb answers. I don't know, I like YouTube. Now, some of you may be questioning, what about your Christianity, Pastor Alex? How does that play into this? Well, you'll be happy to know that I do watch some Christian material on YouTube. You know, I have kids, so I show them Christian music videos. I watch Christian sermons and Christian influencers as well. Now, this may sound absolutely crazy to you, but I feel like God in the year 2020 has used some YouTube videos to deposit truth in my life. As I walked through a unique season, a season of some real trials in my personal life. And so as I share with you today, I'm going to be transparent. I'm going to share a message from my life that has been influenced in part by some videos that I have watched on YouTube. One of my favorite preachers is Andy Stanley. And in a message that he had delivered back in April on YouTube, he said this. He says, "It is human nature for us to avoid things we don't like." And you know what? That is so true. We don't avoid things like YouTube. Why? Because we like them. But things that we don't like, yep, we avoid them. I think Andy got it right when he said, "It is human nature for us to avoid things we don't like." I think it actually starts in childhood. I've got a couple kids, and it starts with things like vegetables and cleaning up. But you know, then we get older, and the narrative doesn't really change all that much. We still avoid vegetables, and we avoid cleaning up, especially toilets and bathtubs. And then other things we begin to avoid too, like exercise. It's just true. We avoid things that we don't like. When I first came on staff here at the church as a licensed minister, I was authorized to perform weddings and funerals. Well, guess what? I don't like funerals. I'd venture to guess that you don't like funerals either. And just as you may have tried to avoid attending a funeral at some point in your life, I, as a licensed minister, avoided performing funeral services. I didn't like them. So I avoided them, and I was really good at avoiding them. I avoided them for over a decade. But one day, it hit me. I was like, "Alex, you know you're no longer in your 20s. Alex, you're married now. Alex, you have brought life into this world. You are a father. And if this calling to ministry is for life, then you'd better stop avoiding funerals. And so I did. And the craziest thing happened. As I stopped avoiding funerals, as I began to meet with families in a dark season of loss in their life, and as I began to perform funeral services for their loved ones, God began to do something inside of me. See, I learned as I stopped avoiding funerals that there is a joy to be found in ministering to those who are experiencing great loss, to those who are dealing with great pain and grief. See, I learned there is joy on the other side of what we are often avoiding. Although I still don't like funerals, I found that not avoiding them and choosing to walk through those heavy moments that death brings, that there is a joy to be found on the other side. In the Bible, James, who is the brother of Jesus, talks about this joy that can be found in difficult times. He calls them the trials that we face here on earth. This may be a familiar passage of scripture for those of you who have grown up in church, but this morning as we look at it, I want to reverse the order of the first verse so that maybe we can get a better sense of what James is trying to say. So let's begin with this. Whenever you face trials of many kinds, James doesn't say, if you ever face trials of many kinds. No. He says, whenever, as in like when you experience these trials are coming, you're going to face them. This is just a part of life in the fallen world. You can't wish these trials away. You can't pray them away. You can't have enough faith to get rid of these trials. No. Whenever these trials come, these trials are going to come. So he says, whenever you face trials of many kinds. And this word face in the original Greek language has this inference of being taken by surprise. So we could read this that whenever you are surprised by trials of many kinds, whenever you wake up and you get that news or you get that phone call, your doctor delivers that diagnosis. Whenever you are surprised by a new reality, whenever that happens, whenever you face or are surprised by trials of many kinds, James encourages us to consider it. What is he saying by consider it? He's saying adjust your perspective, reframe it in a new light. So whenever you face trials of many kinds, consider it, reframe it as pure joy, my brothers and sisters. I mean, this is a pretty big encouragement from James. He's encouraging us to adjust our perspective, to reframe something that we would like to avoid, a trial, in order to find joy in the midst of our difficulty. So the phone rings. Ring, ring. Hello, Pastor Alex.
Hello, this is the undertaker from the funeral home. We are in need of a minister on Thursday to perform a funeral for a family who has no pastor.
Oh, man, how am I going to respond to this phone call? I don't like funerals. I don't like having to go and meet with people who are grieving and are sad. I can't be bubbly. I can't be myself. Oh, I don't want to go into that. I don't even know who it is that died. They didn't have a pastor, so it can't be good. I don't know. Maybe this was like a really bad person and they have set their will up to where they've got the family feuding against one another and they're mad and I'm going to be invited in because I'm going to be the minister and I'm going to have to deal with all of this. Oh, I don't want to deal with this. I don't like funerals. But wait. James is encouraging me to reframe this. Maybe I'll have the opportunity to share Jesus with someone in this family. Maybe, just maybe, there's a family member who has lost all hope because of the death of their loved one. Maybe they're planning to take their life after the funeral service. Maybe I can be a person who can share the joy and the hope and the life that Jesus offers. I don't know if there's anything that would bring greater joy than being able to see someone who's lost come into new life with Christ. See, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters. You may be saying, well, why should we do this, Pastor Alex? Why don't we just stick with the whole human nature thing and avoid things that we don't like? Well, James answers that question as we move into verse number 3. He says, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Okay, so I know that anytime you test something, you're wanting to find out if it's real or authentic. And if that's the definition we're using, then James here is saying that the trials we face are actually testing the authenticity of our faith. So when we face trials, you know this, you discover what you believe. You discover what you really believe, and you discover what you had just pretended to believe. See, the genuineness, the authenticity of our faith is exposed when we are surprised by trials. So this year, it was actually over Christmas break of 2019, I was surprised by a trial. I'd met up with a group of guys to play some basketball. I just bought myself a new pair of Nikes. I was excited. I was going to run and jump and block and steal and show them what I'm made of. I was ready to win some pickup basketball games. So I got there early. I laced up my shoes and I started to try to warm up. And as I began to try to run, I realized that my body wasn't responding. It was almost uncoordinated. I felt unbalanced. And so I tried to sprint and I realized I couldn't sprint. I tried to jump and things just weren't working right. And I started to notice that my knee was giving out. I didn't know what was going on. I just knew that this wasn't normal. My first thought, honestly, was that I had overdone it with Christmas eating. I mean, I was just going to town over Christmas. I was like, man, this is great. It's cold outside. Let's eat. And so I was like, maybe like my body's just responding to all of the sugar and all the junk that I've been putting in it. And maybe it's acting this way, although it's never done this before. But then as I thought about it more, I remembered that there's people older than me that I would ask them about like what it's like to get older. And they told me, it's like this, Alex, you can do everything. Everything's going great. But then one day you wake up and your body just doesn't work anymore. And I was like, that's me. I was feeling great. I woke up. I can't believe it. I have aged overnight. I have become old. But luckily, it turns out that wasn't the case. I took a few weeks off and rested, went and visited a chiropractor. I thought maybe I've got like a pinched nerve in my back. I found myself being referred to a neurologist. And this neurologist believed that something was not right and that we should get some further tests done. My neurologist told me that she wanted to do a lot of blood work as well as an MRI. When she said a lot of blood work, I didn't really know what that meant. 18 vials of blood later, I realized that is a lot of blood work. And I also got to lay in the tube for the first time. For 3 months, I knew that my body wasn't working right. For 3 months, my wife, Missy, Googled everything that could possibly be wrong with me. And of course, she found all of the rare forms of cancer that could possibly be causing my body to not work. There were diseases that she read about that would cause me to have a premature death. Diseases that would leave me handicapped. She was wrestling with the thoughts of losing me. Her husband, she was thinking, am I going to be able to raise my boys by myself? So for months, there were all these thoughts that were being wrestled with. It was happening behind the scenes. We're in quarantine. We ain't seeing people. We're having just church online. But this is what's going on in our home. And so we're waiting. What's this neurologist going to say? What's happening with my body? How is it going to impact our family? And so the neurologist called with the test results and she said, hey, your blood work looks great. I was like, come on. But she said the MRI has revealed some spots that are inside of your spinal column. I later learned that those spots are what they call lesions. And they believe that my immune system malfunctioned and it attacked my nervous system. And so the neurologist did not feel like any of the test results indicated cancer. Rather, it appeared to be signs of multiple sclerosis, which for those of you who don't know, would be a lifelong, incurable, and often a debilitating disease. Now, I got online, of course, I got to start reading about this, and of course I read that 1 in 5 people diagnosed with MS will end up in a wheelchair within 20 years. Well, as an active guy in my 30s, who's the head cross-country coach and track coach, and I still like to run with the team, the possibility of having a disease that would land me in a wheelchair was dream-shattering. I mean, this is life-altering news. Now, the neurologist said that they're not going to diagnose me with MS unless they have a secondary test to confirm their prognosis. So I went in for another MRI, this time of my brain. And they also wanted to perform a lumbar puncture, which, let me just tell you, not fun. When both of those tests came back, everything was clear. It looked good. Everything was normal. And while I celebrated the good news, the bad news was that the doctors didn't know what was causing my body to not function correctly. They don't know what caused these lesions in my spine, which meant for the time being, they had no answers. Let's pause the story right there. See, James, the brother of Jesus, in his letter, if you ask me, he seems a little insensitive. I mean, does he seem insensitive to you? See, here's the deal. James doesn't know my trial. See, James doesn't know my story. He doesn't know what I am going through. And without knowing me and without knowing my trial, James has the audacity to say, consider it pure joy, Alex, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know the testing of your faith produces perseverance. James, bro, you don't know me. You don't know what I'm going through. The doctors are perplexed and scratching their heads. I can't walk straight. My legs are numb. I've been unable to exercise for weeks. My wife is fearful that I'm going to die and leave her a widow. James, do you have any idea what it's like to be a running coach and realize you may never be able to run again? And the dream of running with your boys when they're teenagers? James, it's going out the window. I may have boys pushing me in a wheelchair. James, how can you tell me to consider this a joy? You don't know what I'm going through. But I think James, he would say this. Keep reading my letter. Keep reading my letter. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. What is perseverance? Perseverance is the ability to hold up under pressure. You know, this trial that I'm going through, it's producing some pressure in my life. James, I guess you're right. I do need some perseverance. And James continues in verse 4. He says, let perseverance finish its work. In other words, there's a process going on behind the scenes with this trial that you're walking through. In the background, perseverance is working. And James is encouraging me and he's encouraging you to not shortchange the process. He's telling us don't bail out. Don't quit before the process is complete. Let perseverance finish its work so that, here's the payoff, you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. See, when perseverance is complete, you will be complete too. Do you know what the problem is when we face trials? The problem is that we want the trials to stop as soon as possible, ASAP. When you're in a trial, think about this. What are you praying for? Well, I can tell you what you're praying for. Oh God, remove this trial from me. Oh God, heal me. Oh God, fix that which is broken. What we fail to realize and what James is trying to show us is that God is using your trial to form and shape you. Think about it this way. The thing we want removed is the thing that God has chosen to use. It's interesting that James does not encourage us to pray for the removal of the trial. Nope. James encourages us to pray, but for something different. Check this out in verse 5. He says, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. How does that verse start? If any of you lacks wisdom. If any of you lack the ability to reframe the trial from God's point of view, if any of you are struggling to do that, you should ask God for that wisdom, because He will give it to you. So when my body wasn't working, do you know what I was asking God for? I was asking Him for healing. I was asking Him for relief. I was asking Him to just let my body be like it was last year. I was really asking Him to remove the trial from my life. Was I praying for wisdom? No, I don't want wisdom. I want this to be gone. I want relief. But it's interesting that nowhere in Scripture does God ever promise to heal you. Nowhere does He promise that He's going to give you relief when you're having pressure and stress. But in this verse, you are promised, you're guaranteed wisdom if you ask for it. Listen, I don't know what trial you're going through, but this year, my prayer in the midst of the trials I was facing became, God, give me wisdom. Give me the perspective that I need to get through this. Help me, God, to reframe this trial so that I experience joy. In the natural, a lifelong, incurable, potentially debilitating disease cannot coexist and live with joy. But with a supernatural God, with His wisdom, you can have a lifelong, potentially debilitating disease that does not rob you of joy. And you can experience joy without becoming blind to the reality of your pain. It's human nature for us to avoid things we don't like. It's human nature for us to avoid facing the trial head on. But James is urging us to not avoid the trial, to not pray for its removal, but to ask God for wisdom to reframe it so that we have pure joy. So back to my story. My neurologist calls and says that the test results from my brain MRI, my lumbar puncture, they're all good. It still appears to be multiple sclerosis from the initial MRI, but if it is MS, it's not a normal expression of the disease. My neurologist went on to say that if I were her brother or her own son, that she would encourage me to travel to Minnesota to visit with a demyelination expert at the Mayo Clinic. At this point, I'd been living 5 months with a broken body. Numbness in my abdomen and legs, balance issues, more frequent trips to the bathroom than I want, difficulty sleeping through the night. Every day I'm on my phone scrolling, reading about MS and every other demyelinating disease. And as you can imagine, of course, I'm watching some YouTube videos of doctors and researchers talking about this disease. So I get the trip to Mayo scheduled. And about 10 days before Missy and I are to head up there on a little road trip, we celebrate my 35th birthday. Missy woke up early and cooked me a fantastic breakfast. We have this special plate in our home, and so when it's each person's birthday, they get this red plate that says "You're special" on it. So there I am, I've got my "You're special" plate, and I'm sitting at the kitchen table, and my boys are there, and I'm looking at them, and for months I've been wondering, you know, am I going to be able to run with my boys in 10 years? What perspective will they have of their dad as he ages? When it comes to my boys as teenagers, how will they introduce their dad? What kind of dad will I be? How will their friends see me? I'm looking at my wife that morning, and I'm thinking about, man, maybe a whole new role that she has to play in caring for me, which is the exact opposite of the script I would have had in my head of me caring for her as we aged. In the midst of these thoughts, in the midst of questions about what's going on, is this something more serious? Is this going to be something I'm going to live through? In weeks of this, On my birthday, Missy hands me a birthday present at the kitchen table. Surprised by the gift, I open it to find a positive pregnancy test inside. I know that a lifelong incurable disease is threatening to take over my body. And in the other hand, I have this exciting news. We're having a baby! How do I live in the reality of both of these things? Do I just disregard what's happening in my body? Do I just ignore it physically and just lose myself in the news that we're having a baby? Or do I allow my sufferings, my trial, to distort the news of this baby? Do I think to myself, oh, great, another kid. Well, maybe after the other two move out of the house, I'll have someone else to push me around my wheelchair. Like, how do I live in the reality of both of these things? Like, this is bad. This is good. Does that mean that they equal out? Man, how do I process this? This is expensive. Like, I hit my deductible this year. Oh, no. This is expensive, too. Well, no, our family, we're going broke. How do we live in the reality of both things? Like, I want to be present with my family, and I want to experience the joys of being a husband and being a dad, but my body is failing me. These two things, they seem to be in opposition to one another. They seem to be diametrically opposed to one another, like two magnets repelling each other. But I'm praying, God, give me wisdom. Give me the perspective I need to get through this. Help me reframe these circumstances so that I experience your joy. In the Old Testament, there are five books that have become known as books of wisdom, or they're considered wisdom literature. And the reason that they're called that is because they have this emphasis on understanding and attaining wisdom in all areas of life. Do you know what the five Old Testament books of wisdom are? Most of you would probably say, well, Proverbs. Proverbs is, you know, where a lot of wisdom is. And that's true. Proverbs is one of the five books. But we rarely think about Job, Psalms, Ecclesiastes, and the Song of Solomon as these books of wisdom. I mean, most Christians tend to just go to Proverbs for the wisdom. And it is interesting, like, that if you're going through a trial, that you would go to Proverbs and not go to the book of Job. I mean, if you think about Job and his life, like, what was he doing? He was walking through trials. He was walking through a lot of trials. He was surprised by these trials. And the whole book is him continually asking God to reframe the situation so that his worship of God is not hindered. But, you know, we don't look there for wisdom. No. We tend to like Proverbs. Proverbs is our go-to. And the reason I think we like Proverbs is because Proverbs is full of what we'll call conventional wisdom. We all agree with conventional wisdom. I mean, it makes sense. It's how the world should work. It's not difficult to grasp. It may be hard to live, but it's not hard to grasp. The problem, however, with conventional wisdom is that it can be very formulaic. It can be very A plus B always equals C. And the wisdom, the conventional wisdom of Proverbs, is often rooted in this cause and effect relationship. The problem with conventional wisdom is when bad things happen to good people. Like, you've lived a good, healthy life and you still got that diagnosis. You lost someone who was far too young. You did everything that you were supposed to and somehow it didn't pay off. See, when life doesn't turn out the way you were expecting, conventional wisdom will often leave you looking for someone or something to blame. But I want you to know that there is an unconventional wisdom, a wisdom for those who have found that A plus B doesn't always equal C. And this unconventional wisdom is also found in Scripture. The problem is that many Christians miss this unconventional wisdom because the author is kind of skeptical. He's a cynic. He's always questioning things, and he occasionally has these outbursts. This unconventional wisdom I speak of is found in the book of Ecclesiastes. The author, who identifies himself as the teacher, starts off by saying, meaningless, meaningless, utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. I mean, it's a strong opener, right? The teacher poet, he goes on, he says, all things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, hey, look, this is something new? No, it was here already, long ago. It was here before our time. It's all meaningless. Like, there's nothing new, the author's saying. But he's just getting started. Check this out. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. And the more knowledge, the more grief. In other words, the teacher is saying, folks, you're not going to go through this life without some grief and some sorrow. It's just how life is in a broken world. The teacher continues, in this meaningless life of mine, I have seen both of these, the righteous perishing in their righteousness and the wicked living long in their wickedness. In other words, I've seen some really good people die young, and I've seen some horrible, wicked people live a long time. So in case you thought that there's a correlation between how good you are and how long you live, there's not. Meaningless, meaningless, utterly meaningless. This is like the author's favorite word, meaningless. Ecclesiastes was written in the Hebrew, and the Hebrew word that we translate as meaningless is havel, which means steam, vapor, mist, or breath. In other words, the teacher is saying, life is... Did you see that? No? Well, is that meaningless for me to do? Yeah, life is... Maybe I need to up my object illustration here. Havel, it meant steam, vapor, mist, breath. How about this? Life is... Can you see that? That's what life is. This is the image that the teacher is using. Life is working 40 hours a week, living 100 years, the upcoming election, social media. Life is a mist. And the best that we have is mist management. As I mentioned earlier, many people miss this unconventional wisdom of Ecclesiastes because the author's skepticism, and he has these pendulum swings as he's talking about. Everything's been utterly meaningless. It's just like, what is this? Life is a mist. But then the pendulum swings, and we read, go, eat your food with gladness, and drink your wine with a joyful heart. Enjoy life. All the days of this meaningless life God has given you under the sun, all your meaningless days. The teacher's making a pretty big statement here. Yes, everything is meaningless, but enjoy it. Everything is so mist-like. So enjoy the moment that you have. Since you're here having this experience, well, you should probably go ahead and enjoy it. The teacher writes, I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise have eyes in their heads, while the fool walks in the darkness. But I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. So you can either accept the wisdom of God and see both the trial and the joy, or you can be like a fool walking in the darkness trying to forget the reality of your situation. But either way you go, whether you accept wisdom or not, guess what? We're all going to die. That's the message. The same fate overtakes them both. If this election doesn't go how I think it should, it's going to be the end of America as we know it. No, it's way worse than that, Mr. Politics. We're all going to die. Ecclesiastes, we continue on. So I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish, yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. And then the pendulum swings. This is what I have observed to be good, that it is appropriate for a person to eat, to drink, and to find satisfaction in their toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given them. For this is their lot. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and be happy in their toil, this is a gift of God. I hope that you guys get the message. We're all here for just a moment. This life is so mist-like. So you should probably enjoy it. And if you find something meaningful to give your time to, if you find something to bring you some sort of satisfaction, well, you should probably do that too. So I commend the enjoyment of life because there's nothing better for a person under the sun than to eat and drink and be glad. Then joy will accompany them in their toil all the days of the life God has given them under the sun. This, my friends, is unconventional wisdom. The teacher says this thing called life is way less stable than we thought. We don't know what tomorrow holds. We don't know if tomorrow is coming. But we have now. And we should enjoy now while we have it. I don't know about you, but this unconventional wisdom brings a new perspective, which actually brings a sense of relief. See, these two realities, the trial of whatever you're experiencing and this idea of joy, these two things are not independent of one another. In fact, they inform one another. Let me see if I can lay this out for you. Alex, we're having a baby. And your life is fragile. So enjoy it. Love your wife. Be a good father, laugh, and make the most of it because life is a mist. See, joy is not threatened by heaviness, loss, grief, sorrow, and death. No, joy doesn't ignore it. It embraces it all. In fact, the heaviness of the trial sometimes reframes the whole experience and accentuates the joy. The time I have with my boys is more precious because I know how fragile the whole thing is. See, when I realized that the thing I wanted removed is the thing that God has chosen to use, that's when I came to the place of saying, you know, I should probably enjoy this because the whole thing's holding on by a thread. It's really fragile, but it's also really precious. Let's not live in the someday we will. No, we have today. It is the day that the Lord has made. So let us rejoice and be glad in it. So Missy and I traveled to the Mayo Clinic. During the entire week that we were there, we never saw one person laugh. But if you were at the Mayo Clinic the same week Missy and I were, you would have seen two people laughing and enjoying their trip. At one point in time, we were sitting in this large space. It was almost like an airport gate is what it reminded me of. And I leaned over and I said something to Missy that got her laughing so hard that she started to cry. And at that same time, they called my name and I left her sitting there crying and laughing, making a scene while I went to have blood drawn so they could find out what's going on with me. You see, we didn't ignore the reality that my body had something wrong with it. We didn't avoid talking about the implications that this unknown disease might have for me and our future and our dreams together. No, we faced the trial. We accepted that. But we also asked God for wisdom, and God helped us to reframe our circumstances. He caused our trial, our difficulty, to actually increase our joy. At the Mayo Clinic, we knew we could get, quote, bad news. But we also knew that, you know what? We're here. We have each other. Someone's babysitting the kids. And you know, we have a God who loves us, who's gone before us to prepare a place for us in heaven. Oh, there's an invincible joy on the other side of your trial. You've got to stop avoiding it. You've got to stop suppressing it. If you will ask God for wisdom, you'll experience a joy that has no boundaries. How do you live in this world that's broken and hurting and have joy? Well, it comes through embracing what I call grown-up wisdom. See, grown-up wisdom is different than formula wisdom. Grown-up wisdom is when your faith is in Jesus and his commitment to walk with you through the ups and downs of life. But formula wisdom is when your faith is in you doing the right things the right way so that you'll have the outcome you desire. Grown-up wisdom allows King Jesus to sit on the throne, and it frees me to rest as his child in his love. Formula wisdom is when I continue to sit on the throne and I work to get the formula just right. And I stress because you know what? I have added A and I've added B and it is not equal in C. And as a result of my formula wisdom, I don't have any joy. I have bitterness. I am angry because life's not playing out like I want it to. And somehow in the midst of that, I'm raising a fist and blaming God. Now friends, formula is good for babies to eat. But it's time for some of us to invite King Jesus to sit on the throne of our life. It's time for us to get down and to rest in his love, embracing the grown-up wisdom he provides. So what's the end of my story? Has God miraculously healed me? No. The doctors still don't know what's the matter with my body. Just this week, I went in for another round of MRIs. I don't know what my future on this earth holds, but I know this. I'm here. And you're here. Let's not miss the gift of life God has given us now. Let's live with joy. Let's share the good news of submitting to King Jesus. Let's example what resting in his love looks like. As I wrap up this message, let's read our passage from James chapter 1 again, adding this time verse 12, which shares with us an important truth, really the payoff of persevering. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you're surprised by trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance, the ability to hold up under pressure. And let perseverance finish its work. Don't shortchange the process so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. But if you're having a hard time getting this reframed and seeing it as joy, then you lack wisdom. You should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. And verse 12 says this, blessed is the one who perseveres. Not blesses the one who prays their trial away or wishes it away. No, blesses the one who perseveres under trial. Because having stood the test, having discovered that their faith is real, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. God values and uses persevering faith. God has invited you and me to step into this truth. When the world witnesses persevering faith, it takes notice. Persevering faith gets people's attention. We don't choose the trials that we go through. The trials choose us, but we do choose our response to the trials. So no matter what trial you're facing, persevere and experience invincible joy. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, use the trial I am facing until you choose to remove it. Give me grown-up wisdom to reframe this situation so I can live with joy, bringing glory to your name. And may others witness my response to the hard times and be drawn to King Jesus. For your glory, I pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this message. For more information, please visit newlifekc.com.